on the house, every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Come on around back, Arizona, Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, the Outdoor Living Hour of Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition since 1988. Third Saturday of the month, we have Jay Harper in studio. If you're following along in your Rosie on the House homeowner handbook, you know we're talking about plant installation. If you want to get something in the ground before the summer, now, you've said it many times, plants can live in a 5-gallon bucket in a nursery through the summer. But wouldn't they be happier in the ground?
Sure.
So sure, you could plant any time, but this is... this is right at the end of when you would want to be outside, when you'd want to be digging and the running your irrigation lines, and we're right at the end of a lot of voluntary outdoor labor.
You know, certainly locally grown plants. I don't advocate waltzing into the nursery the first weekend in July and buying a bunch of plants and going out there and planting them. I don't think that's necessarily smart. But if you were going to or you had to, you would certainly want to buy plants that were grown here and locally and are acclimated, hardened off, somewhat used to the kind of temperatures that you're going to see. That being said, it's always better to buy locally grown plants if you can find them. And for a lot of reasons, obviously, but we sure want to take advantage of the next, 4 to 6 weeks that we've got left of reasonable temperatures for the plant's sake and for yourself. I mean, it's not a lot of fun digging holes when it's 110, but much, much easier to do it, and especially while the mornings are still, in the 50s, 60s. Very comfortable. Just make sure now watering becomes a real critical thing now. We're in December, January, February. We don't have to worry so much about watering a plant once you've planted it. But, man, you do not want to delay right now, and you want to make sure it's watered good, and you want to check it every day for a few days and make sure that plant does not wilt. It does, does not go into any stress at all. That's really critical, that first week or two, that the plant just get off and hit the ground running, and it doesn't have any setbacks. If a plant has a setback early on, the chances of it doing well and recovering, become, less and less the more stressed it becomes. So you want to make sure it's off to a good ring. That being said, this is also a great time to make sure your sprinkler systems, you're checking those as it's needed now. I've had to kick mine on. I had it off for a long, long time this winter. I've had to kick it on once, and then I've had to up it even after I kicked it back on. So we've had some 90-degree days, and I've got some stuff that's in pots and newly planted vegetable plants and that sort of thing. So you just got to be out there paying attention to your plants,
If you'd like to join the conversation or ask a question about your landscape or garden, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888 Rosie for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923, or you can email us at info@rosieonthehouse.com. Now, you said something really funny there. You said, the mornings are still cool, but what you didn't say is morning doesn't start at 7:30, 8 o'clock anymore. Morning starts at 5:30, 6 o'clock.
That's true. That's true. It's getting lighter much earlier, which means it heats up, much quicker too. So, but it's still nice. We were just talking this morning about finally turning our air. I haven't turned the air on yet in the house. I usually try and hold out till the 1st of May, if possible. But
are you about 10 days left here?
It's been nice enough that we've been able to just open windows and turn ceiling fans on, and it's been. Pretty nice. We've had a very nice spring. So we all know what's coming, though. So the best way to be prepared is to make sure everything's working properly and your irrigation's working properly. Your plants are already in good condition going into the hot weather. Make sure they're well nourished, well fertilized. It's a great time to be looking around. Do you need to mulch? I'm a big believer, as in mulching. getting the rock away from the plant, putting bark mulch, you know, organic material, something around the base of that plant to keep it, you know, the moisture in the soil, keep the roots as cool as possible. You know, so just, again, this is the time of year you really need to be kind of observing and looking around and, you know, seeing what's going on.
If I was going to plant something for shade against the house on a west or a south-facing wall, is there anything I can plant now that would offer me shade through the summer, or am I too late for that this year?
Well, it's really tough to plant something at any time and expect shade immediately. I mean, things, you know, most plants are not big enough to do that initially unless you
buy the big ones.
Buy the big ones and buy a bunch of them and plant them, you know, so they almost touch together. But there are certainly very heat-tolerant growing vines that could be planted, catclaw, tangerine beauty crossvine, bougainvillea. Those can all be planted successfully, even right on through the summer. Certainly now is better than waiting till summer. But you could plant those. I think trying to expect shade immediately is probably overambitious. You could plant, something more of an upright hedge like hop seed or the upright ilex, the Will Fleming. I really like that one. That'd be a good one to, as a, you know, it's kind of upright. Almost looks a little bit like a shape like Italian cypress, but, you know, you can keep it a lot smaller. Ficus, I suppose you could use, sour orange. All of those make really good, if you can find big orange bells or yellow bells, and plant those, up against a house or a wall. And they would, you know, I would think by the end of summer, some of those would start shading the wall.
You could at least get it in now, and whatever you get this season, great. But by next season,
every day you don't plant, you're losing a day. So, yeah, I mean, if that's your goal, then do it. Better to do it sooner than later.
And when it comes to vegetables through the summer in Arizona, what options do we have? Is there anything we can plant now, or are we kind of past the?
No. We can still do melons. You know, if you want to do cantaloupe, watermelons. Still ought to be able to do, you know, some squash, zucchini, probably cucumbers. Certainly can do eggplant and in our old friend okra. You can, you know, it never can get too hot for it. So there's still a number of things that you could get in the ground now, certainly.
And would you try and find those as plant starters and forget about trying to do the seed setting?
Yeah, I think you're a little late for germinating seed. Yes, buy starts already started. That gains you several weeks. So that'd be the good way to go.
And when you're talking about all these different melons varieties, and we're looking for those starters, I mean, in your local nursery, is there anything, you know, well, like when you're talking about something native, you know, trees is pretty obvious. You've got your Palo Verdes, your ironwoods. Mm-hmm. What is there anything to look for on the starters that might be varieties that don't really grow here, or one does better than the other?
Well, if you had a choice on, and a lot of times it'll tell you how many days to maturity on a vegetable start. And, you know, that's an indication of how long it takes for that plant to set a fruit and for the fruit to be ripe. So the shorter that, if you had the choice between something that was 70 days and 90 days, I'd pick the 70-day one. That would be the most obvious rule of thumb to me. If you're looking at, if you don't know varieties and don't have varieties, and it, you know, when you start getting into vegetable varieties, you can ask five people and they'll give you 12 different answers as to which one's the best one. But I think days to maturity would be the one thing I would probably key in on right now as towards the end of the spring season that we are.
All right, a couple questions for you from text at 411-923. Magnolia, can I grow it in Arizona? I want to plant one in the front yard, and will it need water?
Well, it'll certainly need water. And there are magnolias growing here successfully. You see fewer of them now that we've kind of gone almost exclusively to rock, xeriscape-type landscapes. I wouldn't put one in a xeriscape or rock yard. But if you live in a part of town where you might even have flood irrigation, or you have grass surrounding it, or if you can plant it, you know, where it might be on the east side of the house where maybe the roots get shaded a little bit, they'll grow here. There's a number of them, especially if you get into the older parts of Phoenix, Mesa, Glendale, where the older parts of town where there's lots of big shade trees around and microclimates that are created by big shade trees and irrigated lots and grass and that type of a landscape. You know, they'll do pretty well here.
And when you say irrigated lot, that's like the old flood
style. Like, yeah, where you go out at 2 a.m. and open the gate and let the water in, and it floods your whole yard. Doesn't have to be that. That's just a good indication of a place where they would do well. It could be sprinkler irrigation, but I would certainly plant them, more apt to plant them in a yard that has some turf or grass or lots of other plantings, as opposed to minimal plantings and rock around everything.
Susan in Glendale wants to know if she can grow lilacs here, and she says she's in Glendale. Well, I always appreciate when somebody puts area they're calling from. Like you said, those microclimates, somebody in Surprise or certain areas that, and especially if they just moved here, they have no idea what these flood irrigated lots you're talking about.
Correct, correct. Yes, lilacs are a toughie here. You know, they need some dormancy to bloom good. We don't. You know, I've heard stories of people putting ice cubes around their lilacs in the wintertime to get them to chill more. The Persian lilac we used to, I don't know if you can still get those or not, but they would bloom with, sort of success. Certainly they need afternoon shade. You know, put them on the east side of the house or maybe under a canopy of big shade trees. I think if you really want to enjoy lilacs, take a trip to Prescott for the weekend.
Well, I get the impression there's a lot of people trying to cram in some to-dos here because our text messages are very busy this morning.
Yeah.
Everybody trying to beat the heat one way or the other. This person from... 602 area code, although that doesn't mean much anymore. You know,
they could be, you know, I don't know how many people I call back that have some kind of odd
out of state
area code, you know, so yeah.
And if they're texting, you assume it is a cell phone versus a landline on a 602. This person particularly wants to know about fertilizing an ash tree. Is it too hot? Am I past the point? How?
It's best to feed a plant when they're actively growing, and plants typically actively grow when it's warm out. Now, the thing you have to be, as it gets hotter, the thing you have to be cognizant about when you fertilize is making sure the plant is well watered before you fertilize it. The hotter it gets, obviously, the more apt that the plant is transpiring rapidly, that it's taking water out of the soil more rapidly, and the soil might be drier because it's hotter. So the best practice anytime, but particularly as it gets warmer, is to make sure you water the plant very well, give it a good thorough watering, then apply the fertilizer, and then water the fertilizer in. So, you know, what you don't want is a plant that's desperate for water, and you put fertilizer on and then water it in, and the plant uptakes this very concentrated solution of salts, which are what fertilizers are, and replaces that into its tissue, and the tissue is somewhat desiccated or dried, and that's when you get burned. And you're more apt to burn when it's hot than when it's cool, because the plant is more rapidly uptaking moisture. So, no, it's not too late. Just make sure you really water it good. And in fact, you know, feeding somewhat into the warmer weather doesn't do a lot of good to feed an ash tree when it's dormant. I mean, certainly some of those nutrients will be available as it starts to wake up and putting on foliage, but it's going to get more benefit if you wait till it's leafed out fully to start applying fertilizers. Just make sure you are careful. Don't use too much. It's better to fertilize lightly and do it more often than to use big doses of fertilizer, and make sure that there's adequate soil moisture, that the plant is not in a state of, you know, being desperate for water.
And speaking of fertilizing more often, we used to talk about fertilizing citrus 3 times a year, and a lot of people are promoting 4 times a year for that reason. You know,
great, yeah.
And we're coming up on one of those, aren't we?
Memorial Day was our old, you know, so we used to tell people just the easy way to remember it was Valentine's Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day. So we're kind of coming up on, you know, we're kind of in between Valentine's and Memorial Day. If you didn't do it, or if you forget, it's not too late. Again, with citrus, particularly the citrus are maybe still even in bloom, or they're just setting small fruit, be very careful not to overdo it. You could knock off, you know, fruit if you feed too heavily or feed while the plant is dry. I think light fertilizing. So, if a citrus tree needs, you know, just say a pound of nitrogen a year. Let's just say that's a example. Needs a pound of nitrogen. Whether you feed it 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, you would still only want to give it a total of a pound of nitrogen. So you would just break up the fertilizer into smaller amounts, as opposed to, you know, giving it the same amount, just doing it more often. It doesn't need any more nitrogen than that for the whole year. But I think giving it in smaller quantities more frequently, it's no different than if we were to starve and then binge eat and then, you know, fast for a whole long time and then binge eat again. That's probably not the greatest thing for your body's health and nutrition.
I think that's a yo-yo diet.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of that way. Yeah.
And then this next person has a loaded question.
Uh-oh.
Because we don't know the details of it. So wants to start a landscape project in May, but is wondering, is it going to be too hot? Should I put it off till the fall?
Well, you know, developers and home builders and people that move into houses landscape every day of the year. Again, you know, watering is just super critical. There are probably certain plants that if they were a part of your landscape design, I might not plant a citrus tree or a rose bush in June. You know, if you've got some of those specced into the design, I might wait on a few of those. I certainly am not a big advocate of planting very tiny, like little 1 gallon plants in the middle of the summer. I think the bigger the plant material you can put in, the more resistant it is to succumbing to heat and wilting and that sort of thing, not needing as much water as frequently. But, you know, you don't see landscape crews taking the summer off.
It's just mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter.
True.
Get out there and suffer through it through the heat. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation, or text at 411-923. Texter says, "Hi, Jay. I have a young citrus starting to produce fruit. Some are in 3 or 4 groups or a bunch. Do I need to thin those?"
No, citrus are unique in the fact that they will, you know, we'll get calls in late May or early June because the little fruits are falling off all the trees. People panic and go, "I'm not going to have any fruit." So they will self-thin. We call it June drop. And that's just what's going on. But citrus, you don't have to thin, and you don't have to pick the fruit off once they're ripe. They'll hang on the tree without taking any energy out of the tree at all once they're ripe. So they store better on the tree, in fact. And, you know, birds and critters don't typically attack citrus fruit unless you've got roof rats. It's better to leave them on the tree. So that's kind of the cool thing about citrus is you can be picking. I'm right in the middle. I've got all kinds of fruit on my tree, and I think it gets better as the longer you leave it on there, the sugars kind of build up, particularly the grapefruit. I don't even start eating grapefruit till March, April, even early May. So
our lemon tree is got flowers all on the south side and for the most part all around, but on the north side, it's still just a cluster of last year's lemons, and you touch them and they feel soft, but man, you take them inside, cut them open, like you said. That
really
that,
juicy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Extremely. Now, we've been talking about citrus here, and we took a text earlier about ash tree and fertilizing. Can you use the same type of fertilizer on both of those?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you use a good tree formulation or a good or if you want to just buy citrus food and put it on your shade trees, that's all good. Yeah. There's no need to buy 14 different kinds of fertilizer for that. Now, if you've got roses, you probably want to buy something more geared for blooming plants, and you could feed rose food to your other blooming shrubs. That would be fine. You don't need a citrus food and a shade tree food and a hedge food and just a good basic tree and shrub fertilizer is great. Or buy citrus food and feed it to everything. You know, that's fine. There again, except for your, vegetable gardens and roses and certain things that do have particular needs.
The only one I buy separate type for is the pecans, because that requires a lot of zinc. So I do buy a separate one for the pecan tree, but everything else, like you said,
good point. If you've got nuts, they do need zinc. You can buy separate zinc and add it as an addition if you wanted to. To do that, but yeah, or buy a, again, though, you could use that fertilizer on your citrus and other fruits and it would be fine too. The zinc certainly is beneficial to all kinds of plants.
We're talking about the area codes. This is a 480 phone number, but he says he's in Casa Grande. And there was a time that used to be a 520.
Right. Landlines are, almost, unless it's a business, are almost a thing of the past anymore.
Pretty much. But he wants to know, is there a usual depth that I need to bury my irrigation line?
Oh, good question. Again, it depends a little bit on the kind of line. So if it's hard pipe PVC, the white plastic pipe, they typically go deeper than if it's, the black poly type drip tubing. The black poly drip tubing just needs to be barely covered. You don't want to leave it exposed to the sun. But, a couple of inches deep is kind of standard practice on that. And again, in the PVC, it might depend on a little bit on where you're putting it. But I think typically those trenches are, approaching a foot deep kind of a thing. We don't have to worry about ground freezing here or any of that kind of stuff. So, deep enough that, just typical, kind of maintenance, you're not going to hit it, with something is fine.
Bill Jenkins from Think Green Irrigation and Landscape was telling a funny story about that. He's like, growing up with Dad, we were out there, we dig it X amount of deep and we do it this way and it's the right way to do it. No one else is doing it that way. And he's like, 30 years later, repairing those and digging those up, he's like, that was so stupid. There was no reason they needed to be
2 feet deep.
He's like,
where is that dang thing? Holy cow.
He's like, they completely changed the depth of which they bury it.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, too, if you're doing a lawn, that's pretty easy. You find the depth of your sprinkler, and you go ahead and that's the depth you want to put it at.
True. Yeah, you got to make sure that your sprinkler heads aren't sticking 3 inches above the grade. But, so it's got to be deep enough to have the sprinkler head be at grade plus the attachment from the sprinkler head to the fitting, to the elbow or the tee or whatever. So probably half again deeper than the sprinkler head or double the sprinkler head kind of a thing. Yeah.
All right. We got a caller on the line, Beth. She's wondering, does bark make good mulch? She's on the line with us.
Hi, Beth.
Oh, hello. I just planted a fig tree, and it said to use hardwood bark as a mulch. And this is not close to the house, so termites really are not an issue. The termites are already there, probably. But I guess I was wondering if I could use a chopped up my queen palm tree died, and I was wondering if I could chop up that wood or the bark from that queen palm and use that instead of hardwood bark, or if hardwood bark is just not a good thing in Arizona. The idea is that it would break down and slowly provide some nutrients for the tree down the road.
So you're putting this on top of the already planted tree, correct? You're not using it as a soil
correct.
Mix, an amendment. Then any kind of ground up organic material is fine. It doesn't have to be hard. In fact, you can have a hard time in Arizona finding hardwood shredded bark or ground up tree grindings. Now, if you're expecting to get nutrients from that, you're misguided. That is probably going to happen. There's very little nutritional value in bark, especially, you know, once it starts evaporating and drying out. You're still going to need to fertilize. But the main reason we put mulches on top of the soil is to, you know, control weeds, hold moisture in the ground, cool the roots, you know, those types of things. And I'm all for it. Now, palm trees are pretty tough to grind up. It's very fibery material. The old fronds or the old leaves, I've seen those chopped up. But to try and chop up an old palm tree trunk, good luck. I you may be able to get it done, but that being said, if you can, it's fine to use, and any type of organic material would be fine to use on top of the soil, as long as you're not incorporating it into the planting mix, into the ground. That's fine.
We do have to figure out something to do with those palm fronds. You know, landfills where they take landscape waste and transfer stations, a lot of them won't take the landscape front. So there's got to be some function out there we can repurpose that
well,
for.
We could
we
all have
figured out
you
yet.
Could all have palapas in our backyard and use to make thatched roofs out of them, I guess.
So there's got to be some way, something to repurpose.
I've seen date groves, date orchards down in Yuma where they get dry enough, they can run them through a chipper and chip them up and leave them on top of the ground. But they got to get pretty dang dried out before they'll do that, because they're just so stringy, you know.
And they were saying, too, that they're kind of oily, and they can kind of gum up the grinders if they go through wet, too.
Yeah, probably. That and between that and just the long fiber that you get into. But, I think if you let them get super, super dried out, they would probably do that okay.
All right. So add that to the to-do. Find a way to repurpose the palm fronds.
Yeah.
Palm fronds. This texter wants to know, would it be better to plant citrus tree on the northwest or southwest side of the home that faces east?
Well, I'm not sure it really matters, because you should be planting that tree out far enough away. You don't want to plant it very close to the house anyway. So they're really going to be planted out where they're in full exposure. Now, if you're looking for that tree to shade the house a little bit, then you could orient it, you know, to shade, you know, certainly your south or west side of your house is your hottest side of the house, and you could locate it. But again, it's got to be far enough. Take into account how big the tree is going to get at maturity, and you don't want it jammed right up against the house. So I'm not sure I answered the question, but, you know, it needs to be kind of out away from the house, either way.
And when you talk about the maturity in citrus, they've got dwarf varieties. So you go to some of the old orchards and neighborhoods, and you see citrus tree that's big, tall as a two-story house. Well, a lot of the citrus they sell right now, it's designed to never get that tall.
Yeah, if you're buying a dwarf tree, that's a whole other issue. Then it can be planted just like a shrub. And you certainly wouldn't want to put it on the very shady side. So it would want to be on the probably the south or west exposure if that's what you're doing.
And that's just something somebody needs to look for on the tag when they're picking them out.
It could be very well. It should be very, very clearly defined or labeled or tagged that it is a dwarf tree. Yeah.
And why would you want a dwarf tree versus a regular one?
Well, that would be one reason if you wanted to use it more like a shrub in your landscape, or if you have a condo or patio home and you don't have room. They also can do reasonably well in containers if you don't have any place to plant anything at all. You know, you can put a big container, a big pot, you know, that type of thing. They'll do pretty darn well that way. So it's just a space consideration. I certainly, if you have room for full-size citrus trees, there I can't think of a really good reason to plant a dwarf one. But even full-size citrus trees, if you start early enough, they are a shrub. They're not technically a tree. You can start shaping them and grooming them enough that you can keep them from getting, you know, 18, 20 feet tall if you're worried about being able to pick. Plus, there's an invention called a long-handled fruit picker that'll let you get to about anything on a citrus tree without getting on a ladder. So dwarf citrus trees, I think, are just for those areas that you just don't have room or, you know, it's in a unique place.
This is a question most people in Arizona have had to ask themselves at one point in time. What's the best type of tree to plant for shade?
Oh, my goodness.
That involves a pool.
Oh, well, none. It's an umbrella.
Shade sails.
There is not such thing as a clean tree. Just
for your pool, yeah.
Just throw that out there. Yeah, especially when it comes to being close to a pool. It doesn't exist. Sorry. Some are dirtier than others, but there's not a clean one. So, that being said, if you're going to plant something around the pool to create shade, that's actually pretty hard to come up with something. A mastic tree, which doesn't get super big, is not going to give you a ton of shade, but mastics are about as clean a thing as I can think of. Really, if you want shade around your pool and you don't want to bother with and you don't want anything in your pool, don't plant anything. Buy umbrellas and shade sails and, you know, put a pergola up or whatever. But yeah, there's not a good answer for that.
Bigger leaves are easier to sweep and clean out with a strainer, though. I have learned that from experience.
That's true. I've got a sour orange hedge around my whole yard. And citrus in the spring when they're blooming lose flowers. The leaves, they're replacing leaves. There's leaves falling off. And it's pretty easy to get big old citrus leaves out of the pool or out of the bottom of your pool that don't get picked up by the skimmer. So, but it's every freaking day.
Yes, it is. But when you have kids, you're out there every single day.
So it's pretty
manageable.
Have you been in the pool yet?
No.
I did yard work last weekend and I jumped in. It's a cold plunge right now. It's supposed to be good for you.
No, they always think, oh, it's so hot, it's time to get in. I'm like, okay, it might be 90 degrees outside. That pool water, it ain't 90 degrees.
Kids can probably get in now, but it got your attention. I believe me, I didn't stay in very long.
Oh, so that is a great use of Arizona summers is the pool.
It's pretty hard if you have kids to get through a summer without a pool in your yard or access to a convenient public swimming pool or something. You know, it just It just makes it a lot more bearable.
And it's something you can do outside, even at the hottest of time of the summer, where you might have 3-4 a week where even at nighttime temperatures never drops below triple digits. You can still always get in the pool.
And if you get in the pool, and the pool water might actually not be all that cool anymore, but you get out and you got goosebumps,
That is something where the shade can come in.
Yeah.
Is keeping
the pool cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people put shade sails, multiple layers over, spanning completely over their pool, so their pool is completely shaded. And also, they kind of catch some stuff, I suppose, and help keep it a little bit cleaner, maybe. It's kind of, And plus, if you're in the pool, you're shaded. So I'm in the pool with a great big hat on in the middle of the pool, So
you got to get out there somehow. Now, one of the things, too, is you want to make sure, the root structure doesn't, if you do plant a tree for shade next to a pool, you want to put some kind of root barrier.
That would obviously be the other good reason not to plant something that's a big shade tree close to a pool, because of the damage that the roots could do to. Not that they're not going to grow through the pool unless there's already a leak or a crack in that pool, but they can sure mess with your bond beam or the plumbing around the pool, or cause the cool deck to get jacked up and all that kind of stuff. So,
and by the time it gets that big, it's the last thing you want to do is cut down this big beautiful tree that you've spent all this time growing.
Right.
So know what you're planting, plant it far enough away, put in arborist shops sell specially designed root barriers. Make sure you install one of those a couple inches back from the pool's decking, so it help you prevent that damage. Lawns, real quick, let's wrap up on that.
Transition. So ryegrass is starting to, either it's starting to poop, or you need to jack the water up. If you've got an event or something coming up and you want to have a really nice green lawn in the next 30 days, keep that ryegrass going a little bit. Otherwise, start lowering your mowing heights now. Get it, start mowing it down. I don't advocate turning the water off to burn the ryegrass up, but don't increase the watering to keep the ryegrass going and looking good. We want that ryegrass to die probably now as soon as we can, so that the Bermuda grass can come back in a timely fashion. The longer that Bermuda grass stays subservient, for lack of a better word, to the ryegrass, or laying under a big canopy of ryegrass and shaded, and it can't regrow, it will use up all its stored up carbohydrates and it'll eventually die. So we want to get rid of that canopy of ryegrass anytime now that we're pushing upper 90s. It'll kind of do it itself if you don't help it along. But one thing that will help is start mowing a little shorter every week. Lower it a notch every week here for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Eventually, you're almost going to scalp it. And then Bermuda should come back pretty good.
Well, we appreciate you spending Saturday morning with us. If you have questions between now and next week about your landscape or garden, you can send those to info@rosieonthehouse.com, and we'll work with our team of experts to get the right answer for you. Have a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, and it's not too late to get out there and
get her done.
Get her done.